Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. So to today's episode, the one that I'm going to be doing today, the book that I'm reviewing today is Waystation by Clifford D. Simak. And I think this is the second novel that I've reviewed by him. And the reason why I've read this, or I'm reading this, is because I'm at sea at the moment and there's not very good internet. And when I'm going ashore in Brazil, there's not so much good internet in some of these cafes that I'm going in. So I was having a bit of trouble downloading some new audiobooks to my phone to listen to there from Audible. So I thought, well, let's just find what I still have on my computer that I've not listened to yet. And a while ago, I was trying to download, I was trying to pay for and download an Ian M. Banks novel, one of the culture novels. Let me have a look which one it was. Oh, yeah, Use of Weapons, which we reviewed not long ago. And I couldn't find anywhere. So in the end, I went online and tried to get a torrent of it. And the place that I found it, one of these torrents, was split into four parts. It says, Top 100 Science Fiction Books. And the little note from the person who collected these is some of the audiobooks are missing due to them never being made or me just not being able to find them. Oh no, the person who made the torrent, the idea is that he found a list, or she found a list of her top 100 science fiction books. It doesn't say which list it was. I'm sure you could probably work it out by searching for these books in this place on the list. And yeah, so 100 audiobooks, and in audiobooks 76 to 100, which is part four, was Use of Weapons. So I was looking through this, some of these other books here, and there's 99. Oh, let's just go from the top. So there's Ilium by Dan Simmons. You know, not Invisible Man. I reviewed that already. Have Spacesuit Will Travel. Yep, one of my favorite books. Puppet Masters by Robert A. Heinlein. You know, and going down these, Princess of Mars, Lathe of Heaven, Use of Weapons, Chrysalids, and Waystation. I was like, oh, Waystation. It's in the top 100 books. I've heard of it. I think it won a Hugo Award. You know, I've seen it in that kind of place before. And Old Man's War and Altered Carbon. And these other books I've read before, or many of these other books I've read before. There's only like three or four books in this 76 to 100 of this list of top 100 books that I've not read. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go. I'll give Waystation a go. So Waystation was and this was the Audible Frontiers version, which is I'm sure you can get it from Audible. I'm sure I could get it from Audible as well, but like I say I don't have any credits left, or maybe I do, but. I didn't have any credits left when I left home and haven't been able to download any more new audiobooks. Maybe I will do today when I go ashore in Recife. So, yeah, this is from 1963, originally, it says here on Wikipedia, originally published Here Gather the Stars in two parts in the Galaxy magazine in 1963, and it won the 1964 Hugo Award for Best Novel. I mentioned that before. So the setup for this this book is... I actually really, really enjoyed this. But the way that the book does it, it's like someone knocks on someone's door and goes through, and it's like this CIA operative or something knocks on someone's door and goes in and says, hey, let me tell you about this guy who lives in a forest and by a river in Wisconsin. And the first chapter, or the first chapter and a half, feels very much like, hello, I'm Basil Exposition, and I'm going to tell you about this guy who does this thing, and he lives in this weird house, and he does this weird stuff, and he's living forever. He's not died yet. He's from the Civil War, and now it's the mid-20th century, and everyone should be dead now if they fought in the Civil War. But this guy isn't dead yet, and the last person who was alive and fought in the Civil War died ages ago, but he's still alive and still looking only 30 years old. What's going on? And then they said, oh, we did this, and we dug up this thing, and we found this, and there's these weird symbols and stuff. And this is, and so it's like the setup for the story, while it feels quite exposition-y, is told from the outside point of view. It doesn't start off with Enoch Wallace, who is the main character in this book. It starts off actually with two minor characters discussing Enoch Wallace. And saying, well, he's a bit weird, he's really old, but he's still looking young, and we're not quite sure if it's the same guy or not, or what's he doing, he's doing weird stuff, and he's got lots of money, but how can he have money, he's selling jewels, what's going on? So So even though it's a bit exposition-y, it's like it's full of mystery. And then when you actually go and meet Enoch Wallace and see things from his point of view, you understand what's going on. And not much of a spoiler to say, but the way station is Enoch Wallace's house, and it's a way station for creatures who are alien creatures from across the galaxy who are traveling across space. And when they go across space, they're kind of teleported from one place to another, or cloned from one place to another, all the information sent through. And this little house in backcountry, hillbilly country in Wisconsin, is beside the Mississippi River, or somewhere, you know, by a lake. I can't remember. There's a river mentioned, I think, at the beginning. I think it's the Mississippi. Although, I don't know where Wisconsin is, really, so it might not be the Mississippi. Maybe the Missouri. No idea. I should look on a map. I don't have a map. But, yeah, he's living out in the backwoods, and these aliens come through. So it's really about this character, Enoch Wallace, who is visited in his home time and time again by different aliens, and his interactions with the aliens, and also the artifacts and the science and the mathematics and the culture and other things that they bring through to him. He never goes into the rest of the world. He never goes out and explores the galaxy, but the galaxy comes to him. So it's this very strange thing that he's cut off from humanity and cut off from the galaxy and the alien world. But yeah, he is the way station, or his home is the way station for alien minds and culture and science and things. So that's the setup. And of course, you know, the CIA are looking into him, and the local population are, you know, nervous about him and aren't quite sure what's going on with him and stuff like that. So you get some run-ins with the locals and issues with the wider world. And of course, on the other side, there's galactic politicking going on. And Enoch Wallace doesn't really realize how important of a figure or how influential he is throughout most of the novel until things come to a head near the end, which I don't need to get into there. So that's the kind of basic setup. And as I was reading this book, it's quite strange how I was flicked through some of these Goodreads reviews, and I said it was, in my review, it's like a almost a one word review on Goodreads. I was like, very quaint. And quaint is, I don't want to say that as a bad thing or a good thing, but it's very interesting. These other Goodreads reviews say it's a charming little story, and someone else says a very homey and comfortable read, and other people have described it as pastoral science fiction. So it is a very calm book. There's lots of stuff that goes on in it, or lots of ideas in the book, and lots of things in the book, but none of them are driven by, I think I mentioned this in a previous review, none of them are driven by space battles or, you know, dropships and... It's a completely opposite kind of science fiction from a Robert A. Heinlein novel, which I'm listening to at the moment. It's the opposite of all that kind of thing from the 1960s. I mean, this is early 60s, so it's got a lot of the character of the 1960s, but not the overblown gung ho. Yay, let's get out into space and do this, and let's get out here and fucking fuck up these aliens. Let's go over here, you know, that kind of stuff. Which happens quite a lot. Oh, announcement. I'm going to press pause. So it's got a certain tone to it, I guess, this book. But also the technology and science and like the storytelling ideas feel very 1960s in some ways. But also I had to imagine that as I was reading this, I was like, oh, this is obviously quite a lot of this is new for its time. You know, I don't know when artificial intelligence or the exploration of artificial intelligence was sort of like a new big thing in science fiction. But here, there's this really great passages where using like this new kind of mathematics or psychology or whatever it is from these alien devices and things that they come through, the hero of the story, Enoch Wallace, is like, ah, I will create these people. But in the book, it's really great that you don't realize that these people are artificial intelligences. And they come in, they have a conversation. I'm like, oh, maybe these are other humans who've gone through the way station and now they're back and they're just visiting him. But no, they're not. They're actually just, you know, holograms or something like that. And he programmed them. But because he's lived so long, he programmed them like 60, 70 years ago when he first learned the skill of artificial artificial intelligence programming, and they've been living there and visiting him, and he's saying, oh, they used to visit me, oh, I used to conjure them up, but now I don't conjure them up. Now they visit me when they realize that I need visiting, or when they think I need visiting. And there's a great passage where I think it's like David and Mary, I think their names are. And David and Mary suddenly go, oh, look, we can't do this anymore. And he's like, what? He says, we can't pretend anymore. We're not real. We're artificial. There's nothing to us. You created us. We're not coming back to visit again. And it's a very powerful moment in the story where these, like you say, these artificial intelligences, Clifford D. Simak has already worked out artificial intelligences to a level which is, like, for me, it feels kind of ahead of its time for a book written in 1963. So, that was for me, very touching. And then that story continues on. They disappear, and then some of them may come back later on, and you think, oh, this is great. But the description of how Enoch Wallace has created these artificial intelligences, and where he got the elements of their personalities, and where he got the looks from, and what he thinks a perfect companion should be, or like if he's making himself a perfect male companion, oh, I need someone who's upright, and if it's going to be a perfect female companion, it needs to be this and that. And even though this is only a very minor part of the story, for me it was one of the main emotional, or one of the main emotional impacts. It had an emotional impact, but also it was a main, what am I trying to say, it was like a main way into the main character, like by him sharing, or him telling us what he wants from a person, or from a companion, and how he will build them, says a lot about this main character and how he's going to interact with other people, and kind of his isolation from humanity. You know, the humans he is closest to throughout the novel, or throughout his life, have not even been real people, or they've been self-created artificial intelligences. What else did I put down here on some new... Oh yeah, he also uses some other alien mathematics to calculate how the world will end, how, you know, Earth will end, and he's like, oh, I'm not sure what's gonna... I'll be okay, because I'll go through the way station, I'll become a station master somewhere else, but if the world ends, and maybe I can get the aliens to come in, and, you know, I'll use alien technology, or I'll reveal the fact that there's aliens out there, and we're part of a larger galactic community, and that'll bring the world together. So Enoch Wallace is, again, he's calculated something using alien technology, and he's like, well, should I kind of not let humanity continue on by itself? And this is you know, even if they get into danger, and this feels really strange for me, because I read State of the Art by Ian and Banks, and that's exactly the same conversation that they're having there. They're like, about, you know, when the culture contacts Earth, it's like, ah, well, shall we use our superior technology to solve Earth's problems and stop there being the end to the Cold War, some nuclear holocaust. We could take out those intercontinental ballistic missiles before they even strike, and we'll just solve all the problems. It's like, no, but humanity has to go on and not have their problem solved. That's the only way that they can go on and develop as a race, as a species, as part of the galaxy. And it's exactly the same questions that were being wrestled with back in 1963, which I'm not sure how, if that's ahead of its time or not ahead of its time, but it feels very modern. There's also a big sequence where he goes down into the big chambers underneath his house. This is Enoch Wallace, and he's got this, he goes into this like virtual reality kind of hollow room kind of thing, and it's this shooting gallery. And it seems to go on a bit too long in the novel. I think, oh, just get on with it. Sure, there's some creatures that are coming, and he's shooting this one, and there's others coming in this way. But then I was just thinking, again, at the time in 1963, virtual reality, going into a room which isn't real and having it like a computer constructed shooting, first person shooter experience, is stuff which even now is new. I mean, there aren't hollow rooms, but, you know, you've got the Oculus Rift virtual reality, which is finally virtual reality, which seems to be passable as in, you know, for real people in the real world. You know, there's so many other novels that talk about, you know, jacking into the system and doing this and connecting up here and living in a virtual world. But this feels to me like a very early, an early example of that. And I'm guessing it must be early because it's all described. It's like, oh, I do this and do that and do this. Nowadays, in science fiction, you just say, oh, and he went in, he put on his virtual reality goggles and did a shooting range, you know, and you wouldn't need to get into that much detail. But it's the early examples of these science fiction tropes, or even these science tropes, or even, like, you know, it's not even science fiction anymore, this kind of thing. But it's these early examples where it has to be described, you know, and then there's this step, and then there's this step, and then there's this step, and then there's this step. I remember reading an early novel where I actually only read the first, like, 5 or 10 pages, and it was like, oh, there's a killer who is killing people he meets on the internet. And the whole first few pages, like, and she sat down at her computer, and she turned on the power, and then she typed in run win 32 or whatever it is, and then she plugged in her modem and connected the modem to this, and then she dialed at this service, and it was talking us through the steps of how to get onto the internet in 1993 or 1994 in a way which, when I was reading this in 1999, was first of all out of date, and second, just really boring, because by that time, even by 1999 or whenever it was I read this book, it was just like, no, you sit down and connecting to the internet isn't an amazing thing. And now it's even less amazing. It's like you don't even talk about connecting to the internet anymore. It's because you're just presumed to be connected to the internet at all points, at all times. You have the internet with you at any point, except of course, like, when I'm on a ship at sea, and internet costs 75 cents a minute. You know, like, that kind of thing. Suddenly connecting and disconnecting from the internet is a big thing when it costs 75 cents a minute, which is what it used to cost as well, I'm sure, even when you're not using satellite internet on a cruise ship. So yeah, like, as I said, early examples explain it step by step, and later examples can just say, and time travel, yeah. But that's good. What else have I got here? So, another thing that feel very much of its time in the 1960s is, which you don't see very much in science fiction anymore, which is kind of like this assumed spirituality, or like that, you know, I always like it in these old books where they go blah, 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 and then it just throws up, oh, and then they telepathically connected, and you're like, what? Or they just did this, and then they used levitation or telekinesis, and it's just kind of thrown out there into the world that, along with all spaceships and stuff like that, and also mind reading exists, and also telekinesis exists. And it was just one of those things, you know, it feels to me like back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s that it wouldn't be the main point of the story. It would just happen to be like four characters would, you know, in this big space opera thing, these four characters will just be able to do stuff with their minds that nobody else can do. And these days in science fiction, it feels like if you're going to have that kind of weird, it's not so much spirituality, but like, you know, that kind of suddenly, oh, now then, powers of the mind, which are kind of different nowadays, they would have to be explained in some way. You know, you'd have to have this thing in the brain and this, you know, quantum tubules in the brain which can do this and that, and then this other person has this connection to this alien and this power, and it's unexplained. But it's like this unexplained power that has to be explained and kind of apologized for or explained away. Whereas back in the 1950s, that would just be, aside from rockets and spaceships and like the real science stuff, that other kind of thing, the kind of more spiritual stuff would just be sprinkled through a story, and we'd just accept it, or the reader would just be assumed to accept that kind of stuff, that in the future people will be telepathic and they will be telekinetic and they will be empathic and all these other things. And and in this book, there's this, you know, there's this spirit of the galaxy, this underlying spiritual force which goes through, and some people are connected to it and some people aren't. And if you're connected to it, that's great. And if you're not, that's okay as well. So yeah, that's another thing which dates the novel, I think. But that's not just with this. There's lots of novels. There's lots of science fiction that do exactly the same thing. Which kind of just sprinkle this stuff throughout the story. So, those are some of the fun things in the novel. What else have I got here in my notes? It's quite, yeah, the reading is by Eric Michael Summerer. It's an Audible Frontiers book. It's, you know, pretty good reading. No complaints there at all. What I do have a complaint is that it starts off like this. Hi, I'm Mike Resnick, and let me tell you about the book. And it immediately that happens, I'm just like, okay, skip forward, skip forward, skip forward, skip forward. Because there's no way that I'm ever going to listen to an introduction to a book by Mike Resnick, or by, you know, who's the other one who always does this kind of stuff? You know, the Canadian author. You know, these guys, do these introductions to books, and they always go, oh, what I like about this book is this main plot spoiler, and this plot spoiler, and this plot spoiler as well. I'm just like, shut the fuck up! Why put an introduction to the book? Like, sure, I very rarely even read the blurbs on the back of the books, or read the Goodreads.com blurb, or whatever it is, before reading the book or listening to the audiobook. I don't want to know all of that kind of stuff. And I certainly, even if there are plot spoilers, I don't want to know what the main message of the book is. Plot spoilers are one thing, but if the main message is like, blah, 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 and the reason why this is different from this is because of this, this, and this. And like, this is the kind of thing that I don't mind discussing much in a review. I mean, like, I try to avoid spoilers, but like, when it comes to the message of the book, like, why would I go into reading a book or listening to an audiobook with somebody and then read it through the eyes or listen to it through the ears of somebody else? It kind of gets filtered through Mike Resnick's brain, and then I listen to the book trying to pick out the things that he told me are going to be important. You know, it's like a diversion. And with my reviews, I always leave out half of the things that I think about the book. You might think I can go on quite a long time with these things, but like, even here, there's like three main characters who I've not even mentioned in this book. I always leave things for people to discover themselves, or, you know, is this character, you know, is this character real, or is that character not, you know, or how important is this character going to be? And I don't always want to include every single step along the way. You know, I'm just giving my summation. But you're coming to this podcast to get thoughts like that. When I start a book, I don't want to start off with somebody's opinions and then have to kind of detach myself from those opinions. So, of course, I went back and listened to the introduction by Mike Resnick. It's only like 2 minutes long. And I listened to that again at the end. And guess what? There's no reason for that introduction to be there. There's literally no... If he had just said, This is a guy, this book won the Hugo Award at this time, and he's one of the main important, and we thought it's important here at Audible Frontiers that this is an important book, and he's an important author, and he should be wider read or wider listened to on Audible. That's why we did this book. That kind of thing is more important than one person giving their opinion, you know. Give reasons, but like I say, those opinions that I have to then discard to then enjoy the book. But so that's that mini rant over. What else have I got to say about this book? Yeah, normally I talk about these themes and what it's about. You know, I always like this stuff on Wikipedia, which is always full of spoilers. It goes, themes. The book addresses the Cold War and basic human drives towards violence and peace from a science fiction perspective. It's like, well, isn't that like every single science fiction book in the 1960s and 70s? It's addressing the Cold War and basic human drives towards violence and peace from a science fiction perspective. Like, there is nothing less specific than that, which is, again, the reason why I love these Wikipedia pages. What is the book about? And it's like, oh, well, now we have eight people all giving their personal opinion and trying to pass it off as the accepted view of what the book is about. And yeah, it's always quite funny. For me, what the book is about, I really do think it's about, you know, maybe, I reckon it's probably about the Cold War and basic human drives towards violence and peace. But it's a science fiction book, so it's from a science fiction perspective. No, I mean, like I said, I've already talked about different things, but it is one of those classic books where you go, well, what's science fiction about? Oh, it's what it's like to be human. And that's such a cop-out. It's even the same. It's exactly the same thing. Like, every single science fiction book, like, the themes thing on Wikipedia is always like, oh, and what's this book about? Well, it's what it's like. You know, it's a question. What is it to be human? And then you realize that all fiction and all non-fiction is all about what it is to be human. Science fiction thinks that it's got one over. Oh, yeah, it's good. No, but I do actually quite like that that exploration. And as mentioned before, about lots of aliens coming in and artificial intelligence coming in and people there's a character who is deaf and dumb and can't interact, you know, and there's with other humans, and there's these other people who are ignorant and other people who are clever, and there's other people who are secret and other people not secret, and there's aliens who are really clever and there's aliens who can interact. So you get all these different, you know, different perspectives going backwards and forwards, and that's why I think this book, even though you could say, oh, there's no action in the book, there's, you know, there's like as though there's like a virtual reality gun battle or something. Well, it's not a battle, it's a hunting expedition. But, you know, there's not really that kind, it's not that kind of action book, as I said before, but there's always lots of questions going on. There's, like, all the way through, it's saying, you know, it's dealing with these questions, all told from the point of view of Enoch Wallace. And he's wrestling. It's like, well, I'm not human because I've lived, you know, 150 years now. You know, I'm 150 years old. So do I represent humanity? And that is one of those books. It's like, what? Whose job is it to represent humanity? Is it going to be the person who's 150 years old who has had so much contact with alien species that they are no, you know, they can no longer represent humanity? Or is it going to be the CIA agent? Is he going to represent humanity? Or is it going to be the mob that forms up outside the house? Are they going to represent humanity? And I really do enjoy this question of who is going to represent humanity. And the book that I'm listening to now, which is Have Spacesuit Will Travel by Robert A. Heinlein, has got exactly that same question going on. It's like, well, who is going to represent humanity when the aliens come in and take over or not take over, or when they're deciding what to do with us, who's going to represent humanity? And State of the Art by Ian M. Banks, again, you know, written 40 years later. It's okay, well, maybe 30 years later after this book. It's like, okay, who is going to represent humanity? And when you ask that question, then you're going, well, what is humanity? So I guess that's what this book is. It's like, well, what about these artificial intelligences? Are they human? Well, they've got brains, but they don't have bodies. But what if we give them a body? You know, what if we use alien technology to, you know, because because when they transport things, when they're transported from one place to the other with the way station, they're actually cloned from one place to the other, and then the bodies are destroyed. So are those the same things? You know, they at some point they don't have bodies when they're traveling between the stars. So what about these artificial intelligences who don't have bodies, but they do have a brain, and they do interact in the same way, and they come and go like the aliens do to this way station to talk to Enoch? You know, all of those different questions. And I don't want to give away the answers, but I actually do quite enjoy the answers which are provided or that are hinted at by either Clifford D. Simak. Maybe it's his own opinions that here, maybe he's just playing with us, but yeah, the way that things turn out in the end, I do think the narratively the story isn't very interesting. What happens at the end, there's big coincidences and the aliens come in and do this kind of, and again, I don't want to give it too much away, but it's not a very interesting end to the story narratively, but thematically and ideas wise, it does have some fun stuff going on there, which I really enjoyed, which is why I'm going to give this book 4 stars. And I do recommend you read it. It's, you know, it won the Hugo Award. It's a classic science fiction from a classic age of science fiction, and it's a very, very 60s book. It feels very, very 60s, but I actually enjoy that. I enjoy the tone in these books, which are a lot different from modern science fiction, and I quite like the nostalgia. So yeah, you can check this book out. I pirated it, but I got it from a download. But if you sign up for an Audible account, you can read this book for free because it's an Audible Frontiers book. And the best way to sign up for an Audible account, which is what I have, is you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And in doing so, you can help support the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast financially to pay for my books that I read and other stuff, and other costs associated with the podcast, which is very nice of you. And also, in going to audibletrial.com/SFBIP, you can listen to this book for free, or you can listen to any of 200,000 other audiobooks for free, or you can listen to one of them for free, and then from then on you pay, I think it's like $10 a month, and you get one credit, or I think I pay like about $20 per month, or it's €20 per month, and get 2 credits. That's the platinum accounts plans, and I really do suggest signing up for Audible. Even though I do benefit from you doing that financially, I was already a very, very happy member of Audible well before I started getting money from them. So I do recommend it. audibletrial.com/SFBRP. 4 stars for this book. Next book that I'm going to review is probably going to be Have Spacesuit Will Travel, just because it's another book in an audiobook that I already have here. What was this? Number 78. which is Robert A. Heinlein. One of this has come up before is because it's always listed as one of my favorite like classic science fiction or one of my favorite kind of like science fiction juvenile books of that age. I think it's one of Heinlein's best books. And listening to it again, there's a lot of stuff to enjoy in that as well. So I'll be reviewing that, and also State of the Art, which I've got to review. And when I get home and I can start doing episodes with Juliana again, we've got some other books to get through there too. So that's it from me. Goodreads.com, you can become my friend there and follow along, and I can also see what you think of books. And this is what I really love to do. Like here, I can see that 62 friends have reviewed this, which is, and because all of my friends on Goodreads are SFBRP listeners, so it's got a 3.97 average by SFBRP listeners who are also my friend on Goodreads. Amy gives it 5 stars, Julie gives it 5 stars, Diane 4 stars, Paul 3 stars, but Paul doesn't know what he's thinking about. As it goes on, so you can get in contact with me there. You can join up with the SFPRP listeners group there. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Boge on Twitter, and email me luke@juggler.net, and I reply to every email that I get. If you've got some books to recommend to me or other things, or you want to have a conversation, you can do it on the SFPRP listeners group or just email me directly. That's awesome. Okay, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.